Hello, I'm here during the lunch rush with Janice, who owns her own food truck.
Best cheesesteaks in town.
Janice traded up to Geico Commercial Auto Insurance for her food truck business. We're here where she needs us most.
They sure are.
We make it so easy for her to save, with customised coverage that grows with her business. Sorry, I just get so emotional talking about saving folks money.
Not this onion I'm chopping?
It's just so beautiful. Oh, yeah, nice, the onion.
Get a commercial auto insurance quote today at geico.com and see how much you could save. It feels good to Geico.
My name is Mackenzie, and I started a GoFundMe for the adoptive mother of a nonverbal autistic child. The mother had lost her job because she wasn't able to find adequate care for this autistic child. So she really needed some help with living expenses, paying some back bills. So I launched a GoFundMe to help support them during this crisis. And we raised about $10,000 within just a couple of months. I think that the surprising thing was by telling a clear story and just like really being very clear about what we needed, we had some really generous donations from people who were really moved by the situation that this family was struggling with.
GoFundMe is the world's number one fundraising platform trusted by over 200 million people. Start your GoFundMe today at GoFundMe.com. That's GoFundMe.com. GoFundMe.com. This podcast is supported by GoFundMe.
Welcome to episode 2 of the 8th season of Dialogues with Creators, where I typically interview creative people and explore creativity. This is part of a series of solo podcasts, but I'm working on some fantastic guests for this season. I'm titling this podcast, Books I Read in 2025. Which seems to be a popular thing that people who have podcasts and blogs and such write about. I hope you will hear some recommendations and some counter recommendations. By that, I mean books that really maybe aren't worth your time, which is valuable. I'm going to talk about 26 of them. Some I'm going to talk about them a lot, and some I'm going to barely mention them. Is this all I read? No, but it's what I remember and can find record of going through my notes and journals. I read parts of other ones, such as First Chapters. These are books I read all of, read again, or read significant parts of. I'll get started after the pause. Let me explain something about my reading habits, and I hope while I record this, you will not be bothered by my dog. I read a lot off of screens, which is not good. I read a lot on politics, the news, education, literature, writing, the arts, and history, and theology. I read all the time. I read short fiction. I read submissions from my writers group. I read blogs and Substacks, although I'm not interested in paying for those. I prefer reading to watching television, which I do enough of anyway. By television, I mean really things on YouTube or streaming, like Prime Video. That's another podcast for another time, or maybe not really. Right now, I'm reading about 10 books or parts of them for various reasons. These include The Leopard, which is a Sicilian historical fiction, Middlemarch by George Eliot, Plato's Republic, The Brief Wondrous Life of Oscar Aueo, a book of essays by Wendell Berry, a biography of the man who started the John C. Campbell Folk School near Murphy, North Carolina, etc., etc., etc. I read as many books online as old PDFs as I can find. I borrow from the Dalton State Library, which I'm able to still use. I pick up a lot of used books, and I buy a few, mostly on Kindle. Let me say, though, that the tactile experience of reading a book is much better and for me, and we also know that it is a better way to read psychologically and intellectually. It is more immersive to have a real codex, that's what that style of book is called, in front of you, in your hands. But I have a lot of books already. In fact, I bought one today, used from Thrift Books, on, of all things, and this doesn't sort of go along with the topic, artificial education and artificial intelligence, rather, in higher education. I succumb to the book temptation very easily, and that's why I'm surrounded by books right now. If someone mentions a good book, I am likely to at least look it up and think about getting it. That is a bad habit. Recently, I heard a podcast on Middlemarch, and so I want to read that book, but darn, it's dense. I already owned it, too. I am retired, so I have just about as much time as I want to read, but I am also trying to write about 10 more novels and 5 or 6 more nonfiction books and then my memoir before I lose my mind. Discipline of time is as important in retirement as it was in career if you want to fulfill your goals and dreams. I do not believe in bucket lists, but I do believe in fulfilling your life's purposes, and the written word is one of my purposes. I do occasionally listen to audiobooks, mostly Agatha Christie's. By the way, there are a lot of them on YouTube, but I think I've exhausted them all by now. And let me just say that if you can listen to anything by Hugh Fraser, it's a marvel. He's a marvel. I've never heard anybody read a book like him. Now, if you're saying, who is Hugh Fraser? He's an English actor, and he was in all the old Poirots from the 80s and 90s. He played Captain Hastings. And he does David Suchet better than David Suchet does Poirot. So he's great. So let me start with my list, and I have separated it into fiction and nonfiction, and then subcategories by country and origin or genre, because what you're going to see is that I read all over the place and not really just one kind of thing. That would be super boring to me. So I'm going to start with literary fiction because that's what I write and it's the people I know, and I'm going to start with American. Now that's one thing. I'm going to start with Southern fiction. And the first book I'm going to list is The Crooked Truth by Christine Anderson. This might not be a really well-known book, but it should be. I met Christine in March of last year at a writer's or a book event, and we exchanged books. And so I read her book and found it to be very interesting, and I recommend it. And she's working on a sequel to it. And it is about a coming-of-age story of a young boy in South Georgia, a family situation that's difficult and mysterious. And he has to take care of his uncle who has Down syndrome. And this is in 1947. And so there's a lot of misunderstanding about the uncle and his needs and his character, and that kind of the way he's treated fits into the story. So it's a good book. It may be considered young adult, but I think anyone would enjoy reading it because she really portrays the time very well. The only other Southern book I have read, because I'm not someone who is an expert in that area, is that I've been trying to get through Walker Percy's Love in the Ruins, which is subtitled The Adventures of a Bad Catholic at a Time Near the End of the World. And Walker Percy is a fascinating writer, but I have to admit this book is a little odd to me. He's writing about the end of the world, or the end of the United States, or something, some sort of decrepitude has fallen into the country. It's chaotic, and he's in Louisiana. And because Louisiana was the hottest place I've ever been to, and I was only there for about a day, I just feel so hot when I read that book. And it's basically, I think, a satire about religion and the 70s. And trying to live as a religious person in a progressive or secular or falling apart, maybe, situation. So very interesting book, but can't say it's one I would tell anybody to pick up. All right, moving from the Southern subcategory, I'm going to go to the Appalachian subcategory. Now, considering the fact that my last book was Appalachian historical fiction, I really should probably read more of these. But I did try to read Demon Copperhead and only got to the fourth or fifth chapter, and I felt like I was reading Appalachian porn. And so I will go back to it one of these days. Everybody tells me it's the greatest book ever.
We're here at Menards Bag Sale, asking shoppers what they're putting in the bag to get 15% off.
Paint.
Batteries.
Tools.
Toilet paper.
Extension cords. Grocery items.
Hardware for my cabinets.
Snack items. Crackers and some canned goods stuff.
Shop vac supplies.
Toothpaste. Cereal. Coffee. Dog treats. I've got a lot of stuff to grab.
The list goes on, but the sale ends January 24th. Hurry in for Menards 15% off bag sale. See store for complete details.
Save big money at Menards.
Written, and I think it does have to do with the fact that it's like two counties over from where my mother grew up, and I just feel very closely tied to that area. And so it's a lot about the poor people and the drug addiction and that kind of thing. But she does write beautifully, and and speaking of Barbara Kingsolver, of course. The two books I did read were Clay's Quilt by Silas House, which I believe was his first novel. And it kind of reminds me a little bit about Demon Copperhead in that it's the same social class. It's set in Kentucky, which I believe is where Silas House is from. And it's a good story. And it has a lot of hope in it. And it's based on it's based on a young man who, both of his parents are gone, and he doesn't really know what happened to his mother, although he has bad memories, and it's just his family. And so it's a kind of a story about him. He's not coming of age, though, because he's in his 20s, and falls in love and things like that. The other one I read was Ghost on Black Mountain by Anne Height, and if you did not know, I interviewed her on this podcast back in the fall, and I met her at the Townsend Awards, and she was really, really, really helpful with me and very supportive. And she is known for writing Appalachian literature, and this is a ghost story, and it's spooky, and I do recommend it because she's great. The next category I want to go into is African-American literature, and I read four books in that genre this year. And the first one was The Bluest Eye by Toni Morrison. Now, I'm going to confess, I tried to read Beloved. I did read Beloved 25, 30 years ago, and I just didn't get it. Okay, I'm going to talk about that a little bit more later. Just didn't get it. I don't think my head was ready for it, and it was spooky. I'm speaking of Beloved, and obviously very, well written and important book. But I just didn't get it. Okay, I'll put it that way. And but The Bluest Eye was a whole different experience. It was. Remarkable, beautifully written, transportive, and very brutal. It was brutal to read, very dark. And so I understood that I had totally missed the point on the first one that I tried to read. So hopefully I'll get back to Beloved or some more Toni Morrison eventually. But I found it difficult, and because it is so, it's raw and true to what these folks in about whom she's writing would have gone through in poverty and oppression and prejudice and that kind of thing in this town in Ohio. And I felt cold, like I felt hot with the Louisiana book. I felt cold the whole time, which I think she wanted. Another book that I started to read and I will get back to is Octavia Butler's Kindred. I'm interested in her because she writes speculative fiction, and it's unusual for an African-American woman to write that. And this was a story of time travel back and forth, where she is living in the 70s, and she is a black woman, but she's married to a white man, and she gets pulled back into the slave times. And there's some family connection. She has white ancestors, which is not unusual because of the slave times. And she has to get her husband to go back with her, and he pretends he's her owner. And that's as far as I got. So I will get back to that one of these times to see how she ends it. And then finally, I read in the fiction category about a half of One Blood by Deneen Miller, because she won the Townsend Prize, and I got to meet her, and it's a beautifully written book, but I didn't finish it because, like The Bluest Eye, it is kind of raw and brutal in places about the experience that these characters are going through. So I gotta admit there, I need to get finished, go back to some things. Some books you want to read more and more times, and sometimes you have to leave them and come back to them. I don't think we should feel bad about that. Often I will say this: when I'm at a book event or something, I'll ask people what they like to read, and they'll say, "Oh, I don't read much." And I said, "That's no judgment. I'm not here to judge you." You know, some people just are not interested in reading the kinds of things that I write or the kinds of things that I read. And some people would probably be shocked by the things I read, too. Okay, then as far as literary fiction, I'll go to the non-American. And the first one would be British, and I read Howard's End. And I had read that before, and I love that story. And I've loved the movies of it, and I just like Howard's End. And if you don't know it, you should recommend it. It was recast by Zadie Smith in, I've forgotten the name of the book, Beauty, or something like that. And it's very much a similar plot, although you'd have to really read them both carefully to see that. And it's just an interesting story of people's lives intertwining and realizing they need to change their way of being. It's true, both sides of the characters who are in opposition to each other. The next book I'm going to recommend highly, because I love this book, and it was sort of vaguely recommended to me. My husband saw this person, writer, talk about it on PBS, and I read it, and it was lovely. I couldn't put it down. It's In the Time of the Butterflies by Julia Alvarez, and this tells a story of the sisters who were killed under the Trujillo regime in the early 1960s, and it's a fictional retelling of their story. So it's based on fact, but it's not totally true, and it's just beautifully written, and also very good to know about that history. Another non-American fiction I wrote, and this is a really weird one, and it fits probably more into the science fiction realm, is called We, and it's by a writer named Yevgeny Zamyatin, who's Russian, and he lived in the 1920s, and this is a book about living under totalitarian regime, and it's really, if you read it, you feel like you're reading an early version of 1984. And it is, Orwell even said that he used it a lot. So did Aldous Huxley and some others, as far as the kind of book it is and what it's like to live in these communist dictatorial kinds of places. And it was fascinating, a little more on the science fiction-y side than 1984 is, but and of course, it was pre a lot of the technology we have today, so that makes it interesting. But if you want to read something Russian in 1920s, it's and that was a precursor to so much other dystopian fiction. This is kind of like one of the first of that sort. Another one I didn't know what context to put this in. It's I'm just going to call it genre fiction, although it kind of is, kind of isn't. Is a book called Mrs. Lewis by Patty Callahan. Now, she was a Townsend finalist too for another book, I guess. I got to tell you, this book didn't do it for me. It's about Joy Davidman Lewis and how she met Lewis, C.S. Lewis, and went over to England and courted him and finally got him to marry her. And it's did not make me like her one iota. And I read all the way through it just to see. But if it, under other circumstances, I would not have read it. So, but I did learn a lot. And it was just sort of a at the end. It doesn't make you, she talks about Lewis like he's a god. She talks about Oxford and England like it's heaven. That was Joy Davidman's, I guess, experience. But it just kind of goes on and on. It's too long. It's longer than it needs to be, which I find to be the case. A lot of movies and a lot of books are just longer than they need to be. And that's an interesting observation. I may be alone in saying that. The other genre fiction I read was by someone new that I'd read about or heard about, and she's a fascinating writer. Her name is Margaret Millard, and she was married to somebody else, and I can't think of his name, and so Donald somebody, and he was became more famous than she, but she at first was more famous than he was, and the two I read was The Air That Kills and The Beast in View. And her books aren't long, and they're very Twilight Zone-y and creepy. They're not fully mysteries in the sense of whodunits, but I recommend her. She's a very engaging and creepifying writer. And this is from the 50s and 60s. But she writes about normal people who, you know, have something going on that's not. Then one of them is about a couple that has a long con with other people in their in their social set, and another one was the other one is The Beast in View, which is about a woman who seems to be hallucinating that she's being stalked, and how that works. And then, of course, I have to say, I do read randomly Agatha Christie's. So I recently read a Tommy and Tuppence one, which a lot of people don't know about those. People tend to think of Christie as Poirot and Miss Marple, but she had a lot of other kinds of things. And those are fun to read, but not something that, you know, it's going to be a lot of literary discussion on. And finally, I want to talk about science fiction, which I am trying to read more of. And there were two of those that I'm going to put in this list. The first one is the book Wool by Hugh Howey. And the reason I read this is that I got interested in the TV show Silo, which is what it's based on. And Silo, if you've watched it, is about, it's dystopian, and it's about people living in a silo that does not go above ground, but it goes way, 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 way underground. And they only see a little bit of the sun. They can see it at the top through a window, but all they're going to see is that the rest of the world has been obliterated, and they have a civilization in this of about 10,000 people in this silo. So it's very large. They don't know of, most people don't know about anybody else. They don't know of any history. They don't know how they got there. And they added a lot to the TV show that was not in the book. So you, if you watch one, it's going to be different in some ways. But I enjoyed them both. They're very, very engaging and very science fiction-y. And then another one was Till We Have Faces by C.S. Lewis. And I'm not sure that it's really science fiction. It's more of his fantasy types of things. And, of course, it's brilliant and very important book, which is discussed in the Patty Callahan book a great deal. So that was an interesting, I was reading it at the same time, so it was an interesting connection there. I did appreciate that about the Patty Callahan book, Mrs. Lewis, Becoming Mrs. Lewis, it was called. Interestingly, some say that science fiction is not suited for long-form fiction, that it should be mostly short stories. Don't know. That could be true, because it's usually about an idea as much as the whole setting, the whole story. Now I want to move on to the nonfiction that I have been reading this last year. And that is all over the place too. Now I'm going to first start with a memoir. I'm going to be having a person speak on memoir soon on my podcast, and so I'm very interested in this genre. These were both written by people who work with my same publisher, so that was one of the reasons I read them. The first one is by Tulasi Acharya, and it's called Running from the Dreamland, A Story of Struggle, Hardship, Commitment, and the American Dream. And I recommend this for anybody who works with or wants to know more about immigrants to this country from Asia. And Tulasi is from Southeast Asia and Nepal. And I think it's interesting to read his story of how he came here to go to school and then how he, you know, the final decision he made in this memoir. Or the character does. Actually, I'm calling memoir because it is based on his experience, but I think the ending is fictional. So I should... he also wrote another memoir called With Leaves of... something about Leaves of Tarot, and I'm sorry. And so I would recommend his writing as well. He's quite good, especially since he's writing in a second language. The other memoir I read was Call Me Jean by Jean Cahill. It's From the Outhouse to the White House. And I had her on my podcast as well. And she's a very interesting person because she grew up during the Depression and she's got involved with the Jimmy Carter campaign for governor. And she worked for him and when he was a governor and then with the when he was in the White House, she worked with him there. And it was very interesting to talk to her, and she has a lot of wisdom. So that's another book that I think you might be interested in if you have an interest in that period of time. As far as other history, I like to read history. I would recommend I Am a Georgia Girl by Anne Haight. And this is out of the typical thing that Anne writes. She's Appalachian fiction writer. But this is the story of, I'm so sorry. I'm talking the Frank, the wife of the Frank gentleman, Leo Frank, who was ambushed and lynched because it was believed wrongly that he killed a young girl in the 1920s. And this is a very, very sad story. There have been, there's a Broadway play about it, but nobody had ever written about his wife, Lucy. And so this is her story of what happened. And she was Jewish, but she said that she was a Georgia girl. She was loyal to Georgia, but Georgia turned on her, and she eventually had to leave. So even though her family had lived there in Atlanta, and a very interesting story, so I recommend that one. The three other history books that I read. One is called, kind of off the beam here, but it's called Astounding. John W. Campbell, Isaac Asimov, Robert A. Heinlein, L. Ron Hubbard, and the Golden Age of Science Fiction. Now, two of those names you may have heard of, maybe three of them. John W. Campbell was their editor in a pulp science fiction magazine called Astounding, and it, by who he chose to publish and how he edited it, he started science fiction, and this was in the 40s, and the science fiction as we know it today. And this is a really interesting story because, we take it for granted that things are written. We don't really know where it comes from. It's also interesting because it's basically a biography of L. Ron Hubbard from the Scientology. And he was a weird guy, just weird guy, basically the biggest grifter you can imagine. So that's interesting. But Heinlein was a little more conservative and normal kind of guy. He was military. Asimov was a scientist and well-trained, very shy growing up. And Campbell was their editor. So, if anybody interested in the writing or of science fiction, they want to read that one. Another history book I read that was very thick is called Dominion by Tom Holland, and it was supposed to be a history of the church. It was a different way of approaching the history of the church. It would take small vignettes or small incidences and tie them to bigger movements that were going on. And so it was very interesting, but I can't say that I would recommend it. I don't know who would be interested in such a book. I read it for my own interest, but it's got too much literary stuff going on for it to be true, full history, and it's too specialized about these individual time periods and incidences and vignettes that it probably wouldn't work for somebody who's just trying to understand the history of the church. Final book I read in history was Incidents in the Life of a Slave Girl by Harriet Jacobs. Again, this was very hard to read, but fortunately, Ms. Jacobs was able to get out of slavery and rescue her family and bring them up north during that time. But she really tells an interesting story of how a slave owner treated her. And he was apparently in love with her and wanted her to just do whatever he said. And she managed to not be, seduced by him. Let's just use that word. It's a classic if you have any interest in that time and sort of like Frederick Douglass's book. Okay, I'm coming to the end here. I'm going to get into the nonfiction that's more what we think of. The first one is Deep Work by Cal Newport. I really recommend that one if you want to work on discipline. It made me wake up about how I was using my time and letting people waste my time and letting my email waste my time. And I read it in my last semester of working, so it had a big effect on me. The next one is The Digital Delusion, and anybody who's interested in technology and education needs to read this book. It's not what you think. He's really anti-screens and anti-technology because we know that the last 30 years of trying to integrate technology into classrooms has been a debacle. So it just has. Students aren't using their time wisely. They're doing other things on the computers, They're not learning to read. The tool has shaped education more than the educational goals have shaped the tools. And this guy's an expert. He's very very well versed in this. So The Digital Delusion by Jason Horvath. On that same topic, I only read a little bit of this book because I gave it to my son for Christmas. 10 Rules for Raising Kids in a High-Tech World. And I would, this is by Jean Twenge, and I would recommend anything from her because she knows this subject more than anybody else. And another memoir that's sort of a memoir is Finding Joy in the West by Joy Walker, who's a friend of mine. And she wanted to write about how she rode her bicycle in every state, or in every state. And she did it out west, so she's going to have another book, Finding Joy in the East. And she's a go-getter, and I think you'd enjoy her story. I'm not going to name the last book that I read, because to be honest, it was it taught me a deep lesson. Somebody asked me to read a book to write a review for it. And this book was, as I learned later, it was not self-published, but it read like it should have been. And it was very poorly edited, and it was boring. And there was very little for me to find that was of interest to me. But I dutifully read about half of it and then skimmed a lot of it just to see what happened. And I learned my lesson to not agree to read anybody's book for free for review. So I will never be doing that again. I don't ask other people to do it, and I was, I'm not sure why I agreed to do it, but it ended up being turning on me because I couldn't give it a great review, and the person was offended, so, you know, there you go, and then it got worse. So you got to be careful what you promise people. So that is the main part of the podcast this time. I'm trying to put them out more frequently since the hiatus in December. Weekly on the same day would be nice. So let me end with a few announcements. As always, explore the archive. You'll be surprised who's there. I finally figured out how to see comments and ratings. I really wish you would post a rating, although I have heard other podcasters say that the listener should only put a rating if it's 5 stars. Wow. I also apologize for the commercials, but I have to get some help to pay for this. And I'm not getting a whole lot, but that's something. Please tell others about this podcast. If you have any suggestions of who should be on the show, let me know through my website. That website is barbaragrahamtucker.net. There's also a GoFundMe page to help with costs, but that's only for independently wealthy people. My yearly fees are coming up. I got to think about that. And finally, I hope you will get and read some of my books. I have 10 novels, 11 soon, and 5 Bible studies. These are listed at the website. Well, we are supposed to get bad weather in the Southeast this weekend, so we'll see what happens there. God bless.